Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Lady Amanda of House Richardson, Lord Adam the Young Bull of House Parker, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys, and Lady of Jameson, Lord Brett of House Fry, Sir David of House Fraser, Lord Nelson of the Long Isle, Sir Joshua of House Ross, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry.
Welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Bran 3 of A Clash of Kings, and in our Maester's study, we will be discussing House Reed.
That is true. Happy Cinco de Mayo, Sir Ez, and yeah. Revenge of the Fifth. It is a
holiday here.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yesterday was a holiday. And so we didn't release the episode, it was May the 4th. And so, you know, I figured it, we'd hold off till today. It's still a holiday though. We're still celebrating, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, Sir Ezra is partaking in some choice beverages, for this episode.
Yeah. Low carb. I mean, it's a low carb, right. Beverage, you know, but, it's just a little something, a little Lady Bligh and a little something else. So, Good. It's good for you.
That's good. Hey, it's keto.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. I think you are. Are you or are you not partaking as well?
Yeah, I found myself in a little area called the White Claw. So that's where I'm recording from today.
Is, gotcha.
I believe I'm way north. I believe it's called the White Claw.
Perfect. That's great. That's great.
I wonder if that's like, you know, somebody, you know, people send us their sigils and their house names and stuff like that for the podcast. Like, oh, I'm right. Brendan of the White Claw.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be cool. That's funny. But how you been though? How's everything going?
Hey man, I'm good. Can I let me just say something real quick? I know we haven't really talked a lot about COVID, and what's going on out there, but I know we do have, you know, we have a couple thousand listeners. So let me just say something to people real quick. So, I got laid off from my job. Okay. And I filed for unemployment and, you know, been doing everything right, looking for a new job, the whole deal. And I, didn't receive any unemployment checks for like a month, and I just did. So feel good about that. But to the people, because I know I have friends, you know, there's like, you know, millions of people. I think it's like the most amount of people that have ever been unemployed, you know, are out there, and they're like, I'm not receiving anything, I'm not doing anything. So just keep filing. And that's, I think, you know, it took some time to process. So because I got it all at once, so I just got everything all at once. So if you are in that situation, like, you know, I think like 33% of America or so just like one in every three people, and you haven't like received anything yet, just keep filing. And I think it's just taking the system some time, because I've been filing for like four or five weeks. Mm-hmm. So just to anybody else who is out there that is the situation you're in. Cause I know I have friends who are like, I haven't received anything yet. And that was me for a long time. I was like, well, I don't know. So for those of you guys, just keep filing and it should all work itself out. It just, you know, obviously it takes a ton of time. So.
Yeah. And you know, we haven't mentioned it much, but we're hoping everyone's safe and doing well. We try just to kind of focus on, you know, escaping to Westeros and stuff, but we are thinking about you guys, and we do know that there's a lot going on, and we want everyone to do well, I think that's good advice. Yeah, just to kind of encourage each other and keep keep moving forward, because that's tough on people who can't, you know, for over a month they're not able to get any income and have to survive, tap into savings, tap into other resources. It's I'm sure it's tough. So
yeah, absolutely. I went to the I went to the bank today to cash it, and the lady was like, yeah, she's like, you know, like because I have direct deposit. I never actually go to the bank, and so it's the first time I've been there in like months. You know, I just go when I need to get some cash out. But I kind of know the lady that's there, and she was kind of like, oh yeah, she's like, you know. She's like, they say that they've seen a lot more people because you get paper checks, and so they have to come in and go. And she's like, yeah, she's like, just about like, you know, she's like, she said, I think she said like, you know, like about like 9 out of 10 people, right, are like cashing unemployment checks. So, So, yeah, just crazy. But yeah, I just thought I'd kind of share that because I just know there's a lot of people that are like, waiting and they haven't heard or seen anything. And I mean, it's a disaster. I mean, they're so overloaded that, you know, like I have one of the guys I work with is calling, right? He's like, I've been on hold for like, you know, 4 hours, like every day, like just trying to get a hold of somebody and stuff like that. So I know that's certainly a lot of people out there. And I know, you know, I know some people in our Facebook group and stuff like that have, you know, said that, like, maybe not them, but maybe, you know, their spouses or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you know, I think it's like 1 in 4. I mean, if you do the numbers, I mean, they've said like, you know, millions of people have been applying. So anyway, so yeah, we're not here to talk all the way about that, but I just wanted to kind of share that. And so if you're somebody, you're like out there waiting, like just keep applying and eventually it should work itself out.
Good. That's good. Yeah, that's good. So it's one of those times we rally the banners and we get everybody kind of supporting each other and try to be as positive as we can. So I mean everything else been good out there. I mean, you guys
everything's good. Just, you know, hanging out, working out, reading content, as you know, as and I have been hammering away content on our YouTube channels. Yeah. For all the podcasts, we're going to be recording one for, you know, Bend the Knee and stuff as well. So, you know, guys, let us know which characters you guys want us to study, because that's what we've been thinking about doing is more of these character studies. You know, there's a lot of characters out there that, there's, you know, thousands of characters out there in the books, but a lot that, you know, it's like, oh, I think, you know, it would be cool to go, you know, like somebody like Donald Noy, right? He comes to mind.
Yeah.
Val. You know, there's all the Hornwood, right? You know, we were talking about her the other week, all these characters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You kind of follow their arc throughout the story, and we can do a YouTube video on that and just, you know, give you guys some more content while we're all just hanging out, not really doing a lot.
Yeah, it's good for us, too. So, I mean, sincerely, send us, literally the first person to send us sort of a raven saying, hey, what could you guys cover this character or that house? We're probably going to go do that. Like, we're going to thank, we'll thank you and plug you in the YouTube video, because like that's the idea is we're looking at these minor houses and even some of the bigger ones, even if it's just like, hey, can we get an in-depth on Sansa? Can you go pretty, you know, deep with that? Sure. Like, let me know.
Yeah, exactly, guys. Cause literally Ez and I, are just over here creating content full time. Not how we pictured, we'd be doing it at some point. But, you know, but, that's what we're doing. And so literally we're just, I mean, Ez and I are on the phone. We joke about this, but we're on the phone with each other for like, I don't know, 40, 80 hours a week.
Oh, dude, it's nuts. I mean,
literally, it's like we just turn on the phone. All right. And then we're just over here, you know, working on everything. So, I mean, if you guys want us, if there's a character, weapon, whatever you guys want, let us know. And I mean, literally, the video will probably be made, you know, within minutes.
Yeah, next day.
of you sending it to us. So.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, you know that. Yeah. Like as Matt said, I mean, we've got, you know, some fun stuff out there for you. So subscribe to YouTube. Check out some other cool stuff we've got. Again, we mentioned May the 4th. If you're into Star Wars, Hyperspace Hangout. And if you're into Wheel of Time, we've been going kind of crazy with Heroes of the Horn over there, too. So go check those out. But
yeah. Well, let's also not forget, you know, Up Talking Tolkien, Lord of the Rings.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Box
yeah,
Trek, absolutely. Video game. Again, I've been on Twitch a lot. So if you guys are just kind of sitting around the house bored and you want to come talk, I mean, I've been kind of playing some Star Wars games over there, but I can switch it up. There are Game of Thrones games out there, or if you just want to come over and talk Game of Thrones, feel free to. So just
yep absolutely, man. Okay, so now moving in here to the meat of the show here, do we have any I haven't heard. I was, you know, jokingly before we started the show, I don't know if you heard me, I was thinking about it, I was like, should we just come out and just say Winds of Winter.
Wow.
Be the worst thing ever.
Let me just go ahead and pull it up here. Let me see. So he posted on May the 2nd.
Oh, okay.
Nothing about Winds of Winter. Nothing new really about Winds of Winter in the most recent things. But he is actually, so Gert is on his Twitter. He's letting fans vote, and they're taking excerpts. We talked about this last time. Excerpts from the audiobook and just kind of playing them. So certain scenes and stuff like that. So it is kind of cool. But yeah, nothing new about the TV show or anything like that. But you know, we're talking about YouTube. I think here before long, you and I are going to start speculating on how we think the show is going to go over on YouTube, because we have a general idea of these characters. You go back to Fire and Blood, you go to World of Ice and Fire, and then there's the two novellas, which are kind of in Fire and Blood, the Princess and the Queen and the Rogue Prince. I mean, Daemon Targaryen, I don't, you know, like, thinking, who are they going to cast for some of these people? What's the sets going to look like?
Right.
You know, I think a lot of it's probably going to be pretty simple. I mean, I would have to imagine that the Red Keep, they just use the same. It's going to be the same. I mean,
Yeah.
It's the same. Yeah, it's the same room and the same. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, but we're still thinking, though, like, there's plenty of room. And if you've read that that history text, then you will know that there's plenty of room to kind of, I mean, create brand new characters if they want to, you know, really take us down a direction and make us fall in love with the character and then take that character away from us. Like they like to do. So,
right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We'll talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. The cool thing with this show is that while there is source material, it's pretty loose. I mean, it's not nearly as different as it is with the show where it's like, oh, what are they cutting out? Because it's, you know, here's like the line, you know, Arya walks up the staircase and turns and then, you know, walks in the door. Sure. And it's like, okay, well, that's okay. Yeah. You know, it's not as nearly as intricately detailed as that. I mean, it's pretty loose. I mean, some of these events are described in like a paragraph, although it seems like it was months or even a year. So, you know, now you're just given kind of a, here's an outline and a general idea, and now design whatever you want.
Which is actually probably is great if you're like a showrunner and you're trying to, you know, like adapt the full novel. This is a way better novel to adapt, actually, because you can then do a lot more and you're not going to piss off people and you're not going to whatever. I mean, there's right. tons of room to kind of do that, and I think that's cool. It was also great to read, you know, for our imaginations and for us to kind of think about how maybe these things went down, how houses are connected, the politics of it all. So yeah, I think it'll be great. I think it's actually going to be really a big deal for folks. So HBO's obviously banking on the same thing. So
right. Yeah, and HBO, keep this in mind, HBO is getting ready to launch a new streaming service. It's like HBO Max. It's like them and Cinemax kind of
really
kind of coming together. So, you know, real quick here. So I don't know if I said it on this podcast, but you and I have talked about you know, Disney Plus a lot over on our Star Wars podcast, because, you know, Star Wars is such an integral part of Disney Plus. And I've talked about how like Warner Brothers needs to come out with that, because Warner Brothers owns, you know, they have the Batman rights and the DC and then Harry Potter. I mean, it's like, I think they could go toe to toe. So I started going and doing some research a little bit on what it is and how that's all broken up. So I know, you know, you have like Time Warner, and I think ultimately now it's owned by AT&T. At one point, remember, it's like back in the day, Turner and AOL merged. Remember AOL?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you get the discs and you put it get some minutes, and then everybody used the AOL chat, right? Remember Hotmail?
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
have a Hotmail account? I mean, yeah.
We're ancient. Yeah, I remember.
I remember AOL Instant Messenger, and it was like when you had like the little, you had the messenger thing
on
your computer, and yeah, that was cool. Yeah. Then Yahoo came out with one. It was way better. but yeah, so, you know, they merged at some point. So ultimately, you know, you get through it all the way now, and you have, I think it's AT&T owns like all of Turner Media, which includes like CNN and like Cartoon Network and all this stuff. So I was like, Warner Brothers, right? And so I was like, okay, how is it that they aren't coming out with something? So it seems like their plan is to do something maybe different, where they're going to have like HBO Max be its kind of own thing. And then maybe someday do a separate thing. I don't really know why you'd want to split it up, but I guess when I think about Disney Plus, It's like, okay, well, Disney Plus in general is pretty family friendly. Whereas I think, you know, oh, hey, here's Cartoon Network, right? And then right next to it's like Game of Thrones. Maybe not the best idea.
Right.
Like, you really need to keep that stuff kind of separate. So I think that's kind of their plan. But they're getting ready to launch a new streaming service. And so this is going to be like that kind of, I mean, it's not like, I don't know if it's like tomorrow, but it's going to be like pretty big part of it. Cause it's like, this is the Game of Thrones successor. So,
So
it's going to have a lot riding on it too. I mean, you look at the success of, I mean, I think Disney Plus would have been crazy successful anyway, but obviously its first big major show was The Mandalorian, you know, Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, that they're this is going to be a big deal. I think that's why they canceled that other show, is because you think about this new streaming service and they want it to challenge, obviously, the other streaming services, Netflix and Amazon Prime.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and exactly. You want something that this is going to be more similar to what you saw in Game of Thrones. It's still sort of it's going to seem familiar, but it's set back in the day and it's going to have more Targaryens, which is going to be cool. So, yeah, I think they are putting a lot into this. And I didn't know about the streaming service, so that makes a lot of sense. That's 100%.
I'm sorry. It launches May 27th. It launches later this month.
Wow. That's cool. Huh.
Well, it does say, let me pull this up here. So HBO Max is, so you can get it on limited offer for, we don't, obviously not being endorsed by them, but I mean, if you guys want to, that'd be great. We're always looking for sponsors. you know, so $11.99 a month, and it does include all of HBO, and it does look like some DC movies. So they have Aquaman, the Joker movie, Westworld. Then it says culture-defining TV, so they have some TV on here. So Doctor Who, which is, that's going to be pretty big. Mm-hmm. Looks like maybe some of that DC stuff. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe they just don't have cartoons. Well, it shows Looney Tunes. I don't know. Maybe this is what
they're
doing.
Yeah,
maybe everything I thought they were doing. That just seems kind of weird as HBO Max.
Well, they could put, like, you know, filters on there too. Things that you can set stuff up where it's got locks, it's got parental.
I would have just called it Warner Brothers Plus. I mean, Warner. You know, you think of that Warner Brothers logo. I mean, I think of that when I think of a lot of things more than I think of, you know, HBO in association.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah.
So. Huh. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, so it does look like it's going to have some of those like cartoons. It's going to have Lord of the Rings. You know, that's HBO. I mean, that's Warner Brothers. So Looney Tunes, stuff like that. So pretty cool. But I mean, it's obviously it will be probably the place to go to get, you know, the new Game of Thrones show. And I think this is good because HBO, for those of you that were streaming, season 8, which I was, it's kind of weird because there was HBO Go and HBO Now. And so it was kind of confusing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And it was like, I think HBO Go was like, it was like, you, that's like the Netflix. You can just get it. But then HBO Now was like, oh, it's like an app that you use in the event that you already have HBO.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't even remember which one I had. I
don't either. I think it was HBO Go and I think HBO Now. Because I think I used my brother's HBO Now. I mean, well, let me see. I have it here on my phone. Yes, that is the correct. Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah,
yeah.
Nice. So yeah. So again, that Game of Thrones show, I think, will be riding on. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be like, I don't know what. I'm looking here, and I don't see any like them saying anything about brand new shows. So,
Okay. Yeah. Well, cool. I mean, you know, like that. See, that was the advantage I thought to Disney Plus, though, is that they were selling a brand new show. You know, with all the other stuff too. So I get why you were kind of, you know, thinking like that would almost be the time to roll it out is, hey, we're going to roll this out at the same time we're rolling out our, you know, new Game of Thrones prequel. But yeah, I mean, it'll still be there. And then people will obviously go download that and want to subscribe so they can, they want you in subscriptions too. They want your money. That's where it's at. You know, you're subscribed. You look up 6 months later, you're still there.
Right.
You didn't think you were still subscribed, but you are. So
So here's the list of originals at launch. Okay. I mean, like nothing. I mean, literally like nothing. There's some show called Craftopia, which looks like some, you know, one of those old like Disney, you know, shows like Degrassi or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff is. Mm-hmm. There's some show called Legendary, which is some sort of fashion show. Looney Tunes, they have some Looney Tunes cartoons, and they have the Not Too Late Show with Elmo because HBO bought Sesame Street. So there you go. So that's it. So not nearly as big as like Netflix is launching with The Mandalorian. So, you know, what you consider like launch window is where their bigger shows are coming.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, something I didn't know. I didn't know about any of that, so that's cool. It's interesting. All right. Well, I think anything else on that front? Or
Nope, that's it.
Okay. All right. Well, folks, there we go. Just some updates. You know, we're obviously, again, if George would just give us some news on the book, you know. No, I'm just kidding. I want George to keep writing. I want him to keep going crazy so he can, we don't need to bother him. Let him be, let him finish the book. But let's move in for ourselves here. Let's move into Maester Study. Let's move in here and talk about House Reed. So in today's chapter, the Reeds show up, and they are, you know, it's a pretty cool entry, pretty neat, and we just want to kind of mention them and Greywater Watch. Hallen Reed, obviously, is someone who we've been, you know, as you think of Winds of Winter and you think of this series and you look at what they did in TV, I mean, this is one of those things where you just know for a fact that they're going to be different. Like, to not have Hallen Reed, I just don't know. Is this whole series going to go down and we never see Hallen Reed? It kind of mind-blowing to me that you would see all these other minor lords and every other, you know, person possible. But I get George also saying that person has too much information. Like, that's not someone that I can give you guys until maybe right at the very end. And I hope we do. I hope we get something there. So, but yeah, Hallen Reed's a big deal. Again, we went to the Tower of Joy with Eddard Stark and was there to kind of help him rescue Lyanna Stark. The Reeds are descended from the First Men, which is pretty cool. They're often called, like in this chapter, they're described as eating frogs and being frog people, sort of, because they're from this sort of marshland. And Greywater Watch kind of moves. It's kind of hard to traverse in there. Yeah, so it's swampy, marshy, right near the neck. So yeah, so their arms. It's a black lizard lion on a gray green. So that's sort of their thing. It's kind of funny. Like if you actually look at that lizard chasing its tail, it kind of reminds you of the Great Serpent for the Aes Sedai mm-hmm. ring. Chasing theirself. Yeah. And we don't really have any of their like their words or anything yet. So there's nothing really. Maybe we will. They also you'll note in this chapter like this. It's a big deal the way that they swear their oaths or they renew their oaths to the Starks. And it's an ancient sort of saying, something that Bran had not heard. So we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But really, that's about it. I mean, we could talk a little bit about people who we. So we have Mira Reed, we have Jojen Reed, we have Hallen Reed, who is their father from Greywater Watch. And that's about it. We don't really know much else besides that. We know that he was there, Hallen Reed, that is, was at the tourney of Harrenhal had a lot of interaction with Lyanna and Night of the Laughing Tree. There's tons of connections to be made there, but that's really it. You know, there's tons of theories surrounding these people and Greywater Watch, their association with the Isle of Faces, you know, Hallen going down there and sort of becoming a man and going out and learning, was pretty cool. And most of this comes through Mira and Jojen telling stories, and talking about, you know, their father or just who they are. So that's mainly it. But they're fascinating. I mean, you know, Sir Matt, you think we're going to see, Hallen Reed in Winds of Winter?
In Winds of Winter, I don't know. I mean, so in the show, right, we do kind of see him on that council, right? I mean, they don't address him or anything, but they've said, oh, that was Hallen Reed, right? At the very end. Where
I guess you're right,
Where they decided to make Bran King. So I think, you know, again, season 8 does whatever it wanted to do. I do think we will see him. I think he's been hinted at, and Gurr said he's too powerful of a character. So I think we'll see him at the end. You know, it's possible he could be the guy that reveals a lot, right? He reveals all of the big secrets. You know, that's definitely a possibility. You know, another thing real quick here is, you know, I'm looking up some of these theories on Greywater Watch. And one of the things I was thinking about reading this chapter is, does Greywater Watch even exist? Right? Because if nobody could find it, you could just say,
yeah,
because if it you know, the group of people that would have to be so small. Right. And so you could make the argument that maybe it's just this House Reed family and this castle doesn't exist, but they somehow got notoriety. And so they just kept it over the years and they, you know, are able to kind of live this lie. I mean, they would have to have a hut or something, but they wouldn't necessarily, may not necessarily be a big, you know, we think of a big castle. I do not imagine that it would be a big castle at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Maybe there's something to that where, I mean, we know that people, it is dangerous to kind of move through there. So they just understand that swampland better or, I mean, the other thing, you know, the theory has been that it's sort of a moving, that it's something that they can kind of move, from place to place or what have you, or that it is in, it's in such a location that, you really can't get to it unless you absolutely know like the right path and you don't fall into some, you know, swamp bog situation. But, there's never been really a great, if it's not some big wealthy keep, there's no real effort to try to go find it. You know, it's sort of like, who wants to go there? I mean, it's sort of right. I mean, it's right. Bog, it's nasty. So,
right. You wouldn't be able to take it. I mean, because you wouldn't be able to get horses and men in steel plate and armor to go siege it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 So, I don't know. Interesting that just that, it hasn't really come up yet, but we do, I mean, it's a big deal because of Mira and Jojen and because of how much how strong their relationship is with House Stark. It kind of, I guess parallels some of this stuff that, you know, Eddard Stark and Howland Reed and how Howland Reed became friends with the Starks and all of that. I mean, Jojen is literally helping Bran, like air quote, helping, him interpret his dreams and opening his third eye and all of that. So at the end of this chapter, there's actually something really interesting, surrounding Jojen. Again, he's a young character who's guiding him, you know, like what, like why is he, why are we taking him as such this, you know, he's an authority or he knows, like we accept everything that he says. And I want to kind of challenge that a little bit today. Cause I don't know, man. You know, he's also a very young character and I think he's also learning himself. So along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, let's dive into the reread here. Last time we were in Tyrion 5, that's where Tyrion was visiting the Guild Hall of the Alchemists to discuss the production of Wildfire. He finds out that there is a lot under the city and that it was being prepared. And then he goes and has a conversation with Cersei about sending Marcella to Dorne, right? Which gives Tyrion the identity of his informer. If you go back where who he was trying to figure out who it was, he gave, you know, three men different information. So now he knows who it was. So this week we're in Bran 3. Last time we were with Bran, Bran received the Lords of the North at Winterfell for the Harvest Feast. Each had business to discuss, and many were interested in wedding Lady Donella Hornwood, whose husband and only son had died in the South. Lady Hornwood herself is concerned that Ramsay Snow, the bastard of the Dreadfort, means to seize her lands. And that night, Clay Kerwin arrives with news that Stannis has declared Joffrey a bastard. Bran dreamed of a golden man throwing him from a tower. This week, Bran 3. Acting as Lord of Winterfell, Bran hosts the Harvest Feast and greets Mira and Jojen Reed, who arrive to represent their father, Howland Reed. That night, Bran dreams of the Reeds visiting the direwolves in the Godswood. So let me pull it up here. So it's kind of just the opening sentences here. Dancer was draped in bordings of snowy white wool, emblazoned with the gray direwolf of House Stark, while Bran wore gray breeches and a white doublet. His sleeves and collar trimmed with vair. Over his heart was his wolf's head brooch of silver and polished jet. He would sooner have Summer than a silver wolf on his breast, but Sir Roderick had been unyielding. And so that's kind of where we're at. He's out in the yard. There's some men kind of training. And they're out there, you know, challenging Stark, Winterfell, but it's because they're, you know, they're cheering for the harvest, right? And it's not really Bran that they're cheering for, is kind of what, you know, we're seeing this through Bran's eyes. And then really the chapter kind of begins is right once these new people arrive, mm-hmm. which is the Reeds.
Yeah, yeah. So it starts out, you know, like the harvest feast is kind of going on. Interesting note here. So Sir Roderick, I just wanted to point this out. He has his daughter, Beth, who is there. So that's just one of, it's important later on. So like his daughter is there with them. Sir Roderick's pretty cool. And as you say, yeah, they're kind of, Bran has like a role to play in this. He's got sort of, he's wearing this hat of the Stark in Winterfell and has to kind of do certain things, but I kind of wanted to talk about this is the harvest feast, you know, and so there's a lot of different foods and stuff listed here. I just wanted to kind of go through these real quick. So you have venison pies, chunky with carrots, full of carbs. Like that is full of carbs. Bacon, good. We're good on carbs there. Let's see. Mushrooms are good. You've got, I'm going through these and I'm like savory duck, not bad. Let me think here. Cold fruit soup. Fruit is deceivingly high in carbs. Like I was reading through this and I was just like going through in my keto mind thinking about like, wow, so many carbs. Then you get to Lord Wyman who brings all the fish. And I'm like, good. We are solid. I'm sitting here thinking, what could I eat at the harvest feast? And we've got crabs, you know, we've got some whitefish, we got some cod, lobster, so on. It's really good. But then we go back to black bread, honey cakes full of carbs, you know, biscuits and stuff. So I just thought it was kind of funny as I was reading through it. And then you get down to the wheels of white cheese, right? We're set at every table. Cheese, pretty good on keto and low in carbs. And then the wines, gotta stay away from that. But I just thought it was funny. You know, George does spend a lot of time describing food. That's a massive paragraph there where he just goes over all the foods that are listed there. And this is sort of why, you know, Sir Matt does the meat and cheese. You know, we kind of look at that cookbook and we look at how much time he spends here. And it is, if one day we ever get sort of a tell-all from George or we learn more about these things, there's theories on food and these references and stuff. They also tell you more about that. It's he's building characters or he's doing some indirect characterization on these other characters through food, you know, knowing that White Harbor is a place where they're bringing in a lot of fish and that Manderly is, you know, that sort of reminds you as the reader that is, you know, that's who that guy is. And that's his region. That's where he's from. So it's just really helpful. And I think it's one of the things he gets criticized sometimes for spending a lot of time describing the foods. But again, if you pay attention to it and you think about where they're at, like you go to Lemon Gate and you go to some of these other theories and you go to some of the wines and you look at that stuff and where things are coming from and reliable and unreliable narrators. When you look for lies and deceit and stuff, like sometimes you have to look at like what these people are actually eating or saying or where they said the food comes from. And it's intricate. That's sort of why we love this series so much, is that there is so much of that. So one, I thought it was funny. And then two, I just kind of thought I got to mention it. Just so folks are aware that, you know, there's a lot of carbs in what they're eating there, but the fish is good. So
there is, you know, I'm sure there is a lot of carbs in what they're eating. There. But yeah. You know, I mean, hey man, they're eating, it's a harvest feast. They're hammering down some food. Yeah.
Yeah. They're singing. There's drink. I think Hodor is listening to the musicians at first. Yeah. He's dancing and stuff. And then, they slowly kind of get, you know, drowned out, and this is a good thing. I mean, this is really cool, you know. And before this, remember in the last chapter too, that they were talking about the harvest. They were talking about like, have you put, you know, this much away, or to store? You need to start storing more and all that kind of stuff. So Mr. Lewin was kind of giving them that advice, which was good. So now we're kind of seeing some of that, and this is also a way too where you're getting everybody together. You're supporting a new king. You're in the north, away from this war, and this is an important tradition to kind of keep up. And yeah, so it's pretty cool. So we're meeting and greeting people as they come in. The big thing too for Bran in this is that he's trying to figure out what to say. He's passing on foods and all that kind of stuff. It's what pisses him off though are the Freys. The Freys are sitting up there at the high table, and he's not too fond of that. But he definitely does not like them. And there's some major foreshadowing too at the start of this, right? So when he mentions that he's talking about all the new faces that he sees sitting around the hall, and it's because his father, you know, this is something that Bran is dealing with. It's because his father went south with a lot of men and they didn't come back. And so that's tough. And he sees new faces and they've had to promote people. And he even says at one point, he says he wonders if more will die or if any will come back from, you know, Rob's host. And it's just sort of like, wow, I read that line. I was like, a lot of them won't, you know, they're not going to make it. Like it's kind of crazy, but so yeah.
I mean, and it is, it's really hard. I mean, you got to think about Bran being as young as he is in this situation where it's like his mother and his brother are gone and his dad is now dead and his sisters are gone and Jon, you know, is gone. So it's just him, Rickon and Maester Luwin.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. It is. And so now he's surrounded by all these different, you know, individuals that we don't really know that well. These Bran chapters are actually kind of important, though, because we do all these members, you know, Clay Serwyn, the Umbers, all these individuals that are here, Manderly, like they become mm-hmm. big players later on. We need to understand their lands and the dynamics and look at like, you know, the Umbers having a difficult time, maybe wanting to work with the Manderlys or something like that's hinted at. But then later on, are we led to believe that they're not going to? And then isn't it kind of ironic that later on they do work together? You know, those are the types of things that are being laid down here in these chapters. So, you know, it's fascinating. If you ever get a chance to go look at a map of the North and plot out some of these houses, we get a lot of minor houses, like the Tallhearts and stuff and their role. And all of this is going to come to play later on with Theon too, when Theon comes North. So that's sort of why, it may not seem like a whole lot, like the big focus here is the Reeds showing up, you know, Jojen and Meera, but, before we get there, there's a lot of stuff going down. And they're just names and mentions and these people and their connections to other people in the North. So I just wanted to kind of point that out in case you're more interest in that, or if you were someone who was going to study the Grand Northern Conspiracy and look at alliances and stuff, you can actually go back to these chapters to help you do that, to help you understand who they are and maybe who is more willing to work with others and who is vying for, you know, Lady Hornwood's her lands and keeps and stuff like that. So
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of names to keep track of here, but again, it's also great in that part of world building, you know, adding to the North and who are a lot of these people. Yeah, as you said, if you want to go back and study that Grand Northern Conspiracy later and keep track of who are all these houses and everything. And you know, they'll come back later too, because if it does go anything like the show, right, and you know, we do get some big battle of Winterfell and battle in the North, you know, it's keeping track of who all these houses are that still exist after Ramsay and, you know, the battle with the Lannisters and who all's there for that battle.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Very, very important. So, okay. Yeah. We get some more, a lot of this in the beginning is Bran looking around. Like he looks at, Lord Wyman and, they had to build like a custom chair for him, which I thought was funny. I mean, George cannot help himself just mentioning how fat he is and just how like, I don't. It's brought up so much that I think you start to think he's not a big player in the game, and that he's not someone who's going to. I think it's his way of showing that you can underestimate people like that. Back in the day, it's just the same thing with Illyrio and these guys who are older, who are wizened, who maybe let themselves go a little bit, but they know what they're doing. They're smart guys, and he's ambitious, and his house in general, the Manderlys moving from the south to the north, like that is, and that's. That's they've preserved themselves. They still sort of, you know, they're back and forth between some of the, like their gods and stuff are, it's a little like they don't seem to quite fit in with the North, but yet they're super loyal and they're jolly. Like his demeanor is very much something that Bran enjoys. And, you know, I don't know, but like, wouldn't it be such a twist, right? If House Manderly ends up being just playing everybody, you know, and they're really masters at this game, and you know, you just don't assume them to either be a villain or even like a great hero. They're really just right there in the middle, and it's not until later on when they show up and really start making some moves in the privy that we start to think, wow, okay, like the game is definitely going up a notch. But so yeah, I just thought that was interesting. They're bringing that up, and it's mentioned so often. He's sitting next to Lady Hornwood again, which is funny, because she's just picking through her food and not really knowing what's, not really paying much attention. And she's gone through a great loss and stuff too. So you have these folks who are here. Some are jolly and some are not as jolly because they've gotten word back that they've lost very important people in this war, in Rob's war. So yeah, something to kind of think about, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. So then we kind of move on here and we get to our new characters, right? You know, at the foot of the hall, the doors opened and a gust of cold air made the torches flame brighter for an instant. The Lady Mira of House Reed and with her brother Jojen of Greywater Watch. And then, you know, Bran kind of notices... who are they? Mudmen, Little Walder answers. They're thieves and cravens with green teeth from eating frogs. You know, must greet these ones warmly. I had not thought to see them here, but, you know who they are. Bran nods. Crannog men from the north. Howland Reed was a great friend of your father, Sir Roderick told him. As these two are his, it would seem. As the newcomers walked the length of the hall, Bran noticed that one was a girl, though what he would never have known by the way she dresses. And then he knows, you know, though near Rob's age, she was slim as a boy with long brown hair knotted behind her head with the only bare suggestion of breast. A woven net hung from one slim hip, a long bronze knife in the other. Under her arm, she carries an old iron great helm spotted with rust. A frog spear and round leather shield were strapped to her back. Her brother, several years younger and bore no weapons, all of his garb was green, even to the leather of his boots. When he came closer, Bran saw that his eyes were the color of moss, though his teeth looked white as anyone else's. Both Reeds were slight of build, slender as swords, and scarcely taller than Bran himself. My lord of Stark, the years have passed in their hundreds and their thousands since my folk first swore their fealty to the king of the north. My lord father has sent us here to say the words again for our people.
That's a good description of them. They're very different. They don't look coming from that swamp terrain and stuff. They have different weapons. They have different. They're outfitted differently. And, you know, this is really cool because I love Mira Reed so much. I think she's great. And she's literally, she's armored up, air quote, armored up. And her brother's not, right? He's sort of that sage, that mystic figure, what we're going to learn more about as we move on. But, and they show right away how different they are by coming in and swearing their fealty in a different way to the point where it actually puts Bran off. He doesn't really even know quite how to take it. Now, he's also put off because there's this little line here. She's looking at me, he realized. Like, he starts to realize that, like, he's looking at Mira going, yeah. I mean, I think there's feelings early on between him and Mira, and those are going to, you know, continue to grow. So, right.
Yeah, yeah. And I think might be different than the show.
You think so? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean... On one hand, he's the three-eyed raven now, and that was some pretty funny stuff, right, with Sam. When Sam walks in, he says, I'm the three-eyed raven. Sam's like, oh, okay then. Right. It's almost like they just wrote Mira off, and then we didn't see her again. I mean, so I don't know. I don't think Gurr is going to do that. I think it could go down similarly, but it'll be a much more detailed, it'll be different.
Right, yeah, it really will. And I don't care whether you believe in Jojen Paste or Jojen actually, you know, dying or whatever. You know, it seems to be an indicator from the show that, yeah, she's going to continue on to what point and where she goes from there. I don't know. I just don't see that much change happening in Bran in one book. You know, like I think of just Winds of Winter and I'm like, I'm looking at him as this young boy. I don't know that going into, like, his training is going to change him that much. We can get into that later though, but like, I'm totally with you. I think it's going to go different. And I think if you go back and look at how Bran interacts with Mira And even his interaction, I know there's been speculation, his interaction through Hodor, you know, are those Hodor's thoughts? Are they Bran's thoughts and so on? But still, he definitely, I think, likes her, you know, and there's something there. And there's also this whole bit where, like, he knows that they're extra special and that they were special to his father. And so there's almost this, like, there's, even though all these other lords showed up and they're fancy and they can bring more resources and everything, there's something else to this house and to this, that kind of cuts through everybody else's, like, allegiance to the Starks. For some reason, the Reeds are, like ultra connected. And I think that's pretty cool. And so, you know, one of the things that they swear by earth and water, and then they swear by bronze and iron, and they also swear by ice and fire. And
right. Which is big, because I think that's the first time.
Yeah.
That's the first time we hear that. I mean, unless I might be wrong, but I mean, just thinking back to everything we've read so far in the chapters.
Well, actually swearing by ice and fire. Yeah. Like that's a big deal. I mean, that's huge. And you know, for this to be, I think again, you know, George writes a Game of Thrones, right, and knows that it's going to be in this series, you know, or does he, right? And then he'd be writing the second book, and this is now part of a series called A Song of Ice and Fire. And to have that show up in there, like, you have to be underlining that, going, okay, like, these guys are important. There's something here. This is a big deal. It's made an absolute, straight-on, you know, direct connection to the series. We swear it by ice and fire. What does that mean? You know, what does that actually mean? So... yeah, and Bran doesn't even really know how to respond exactly. May your winters be short and your summers bountiful, right? That's normally a good thing to say. So, Rise, I am Brandon Stark, and Mira kind of got to her feet, helped her brother up. That's the other thing, too. You notice that it seems that Jojen is sickly, that he is almost weaker, thinner. I don't really know. Like, they character, like, he has trouble getting up there, moves a little slower. Seems to just be weaker in general. And when you go look at, like, Greenseers, and you look at how they were described and characterized and things like that, like their strength is it's not in their limbs and their muscles and things like that. It's in their minds and in their extra abilities and those extra attributes. So, and he has the clear indicator with his eyes, the moss green eyes, that he is a Greenseer, essentially.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that recently. I think if it was... and on Patreon or here about the Green Seers. I think it was last week when we were doing the Blood Raven conversation. The idea that the moss green eyes being a trait of Green Seers.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's interesting. And gosh, I mean, I have so many thoughts on Jojen, and I have so many thoughts on what like his possible mistakes are, and just misinterpretations and things like that are going on, because we're oversold on the idea that we should trust these two. We are sold it's crazy. We haven't heard much about this. We've heard, like, it's basically through Eddard Stark and his connection to Hallen Reed that we're like, oh, gotta trust these guys. Oh, and they do some extra special sacred swearing thing that's next level. Oh, and they have some insight into, like, green sight and stuff, and he's understanding. He's connecting with Bran in a way that Maester Luwin cannot and will not, actually. He won't even entertain Bran's dreams, but yet Jojen here is sort of saying, I gotcha, and I've gone through something similar. Let me kind of guide you in this. And that's interesting. And there's just a lot of different things that seem to be influencing Bran. And so I just say you kind of got to go at it, and you got to look at it and question and sort of see where what's connecting to what. And not to jump clear to the end of this, A Dance with Dragons, but there's some major stuff there that, like, later on, as you go through this reread, I would say pay close attention to Jojen and symbols around him and the way that he speaks, connotation surrounding his, like, his word choice and his death, because and his potential, his foreshadowed death. Like, it happens in this chapter. He says, not to jump right there, but he says, you know, that this is not the day he will die. He has foreseen his death. He knows when he's going to die, and it's not today. So that gives him this, you know, uber confidence to kind of say, I'm good, and I know events, and I know that that we're safe here for whatever reason. So, ancient swearing, it's right. Pretty cool. And Bran now is going to have them kind of take a, you know, he has to kind of send some food their way and let them. He's hoping he doesn't have to eat frog himself, right?
Right. Yeah, and he tries to offer them something, and he's just he's trying to be polite, but doesn't, you know, he can't really recall what to say. And so he's just gonna offer you meat and mead of Winterfell, right? But okay, so really kind of important here is, so, you know, right once they're done, right? So they kind of sit down, they're eating food, and Bran's just kind of, you know, talking about Summer and how he'll keep Shaggy Dog away, right? And then we're just starting to get a little bit more. You know, his father has sent letters to Lord of Greywater over years, but none of the Crowning Men had ever called at Winterfell. He would like to have talked to them more, but the Great Hall was so noisy, he doesn't really get a chance. He asks, you know, do they really eat frogs? Aye, Sir Roderick says, frogs and fish and lizard lions. You know, maybe they don't have sheep and cattle, Bran thinks, which I doubt that they do, you know, being living in swamps. So, but after that, right, they talk about how, you know, they're shoving the tables back. There's going to begin dancing. Then a song is being sung, right? And it says, when the singer reached the part in The Night That Ended, where the Night's Watch rode forth to meet the others in the Battle of the Dawn, he blew a blast that set all the dogs barking. And then, you know, two Glover men are spinning some girls around and stuff like that. And so it's just kind of interesting that in this, right, Hodor's dancing, you have this line here, right, that the reeds show up and Jojen, you know, has moss green eyes, and you know, when you come back to this, you're thinking, oh wow, he's got green sight and all of these things, and they talk about the children of the forest, and then we're singing a song about how the Night's Watch rode forth to meet the others at the Battle of the Dawn. It's just kind of interesting, right, in that it's Gurr just kind of has that line in there, and it's kind of buried, and it's kind of like, okay, now the reeds are here, they're these new people, and so we're really thinking about who are these people, we know we've heard about them, and then you kind of get hit with this line mashed into a bunch of other stuff that's not really important. I mean, it's just dancing and, you know, setting the stage, and then, you know, you kind of move past it. It's the way he does things, right?
Oh,
it's those kind of hidden lines. Yeah. He will, you know, you go back to when Ned is riding, right? And he's, you know, after the whole he and Jaime Lannister kind of fight, he's riding and the rain's pounding, and he starts to think of, he's thinking of Lyanna and then Rhaegar, right? At the same time and all of this stuff. And so it's just interesting when he has all of these things happen, he'll throw these lines in. You know, and we just heard that they swore in ice and fire, and now we're talking, now there's a line about the others a little bit later that's just kind of woven in there, and then boom, here you go afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, it's huge. I mean, you're exactly right. They're talking about, again, the song is The Night That Ended, and you have the Night's Watch riding forth. It's big. It's snuck. It's slipped in there. It is sort of drawing us to this conclusion that we're talking now about a bigger idea or concept here, something that ties all the way back to the Long Night and ancient sort of, you know, whatever, prophecy and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, I think that's interesting. Now, and also too, they're focused in on the direwolves. I mean, that's Bran is excited because they do ask about the direwolves, you know, like that is something, you just mentioned that, but I think that's important. And they think like that's key. That's also key to the relationship building that he has with them, is that other people are scared of them and they don't want to be around them. But yet here they are kind of asking about them, and that made Bran happy. So yeah, you're right. They sneaked that line in. That's a good one. I did not actually, you know, even see that or recognize that when I first, cause they go right into the Glovers or dance and spinning girls, like you say. And Sir Roderick is approaching Lady Hornwood, all the stuff we've been thinking about. And you can almost miss it. It's literally just, it's actually one sentence, and it's just right. Yeah. Snuck right in there. So, okay. And then after that, so yeah. So as you say, we're dancing, we're doing everything. Back to, by the way, Wyman just, dancing with, Beth Cassell, which is pretty cool. You know, he's nimble. He's actually pretty nimble. He's a pretty good dancer. So, Clay Serwin kind of takes over after that. But really Bran just stays long enough to be polite, and then he's got to, you know, time for bed, got to get to those dreams and get back to his dream world. So, he gets Hodor and as he's heading out, you know, they kind of run across the servants giggling and some, you know, some stuff going on out there in the back chamber, right? In the back hallway. Looks like somebody's hooking up a little bit. So that was, he's moving past that, tells Hodor to kind of keep moving. And then we get to where he's going to go up And he's, once he goes to bed, he's going to, well, actually, I'm sorry, before we get to that part, let's mention this. This is important because it ties into Hal and Reed. So when he blew out his bedside candle, darkness covered him like a soft, familiar blanket. The faint sound of music drifted through his shuttered windows. Something his father had told him once when he was little came back to him suddenly. He had asked, and it just came back to him suddenly, by the way, just out of nowhere.
Right, right, yeah, right.
He had asked Lord Eddard if the Kingsguard were truly the finest knights in the Seven Kingdoms. No longer, his father answered, but once they were a marvel, a shining lesson to the world. Was there one who was the best of all? The finest knight I ever saw was Sir Arthur Dayne, who fought with a blade called Dawn. Forged, you know, for, and again, we just had a reference to, by the way, the Battle for Dawn, right? So we just had that, as you say, we had a, they rode forth, the Night's Watch rode forth against the others in the battle for the Dawn. And we had, now we have a blade that's wielded by Sir Arthur Dayne that's called Dawn, forged in the heart of a fallen star. They called him the Sword of the Morning. And he would have killed me, but for Hal and Reed. Father had gotten sad then, and he would say no more. Bran wished he had asked him what he meant. You know, so, I mean, let's go here. Right. I mean, that's right. Your connection.
Exactly. We had the Battle of the Dawn, and now he's thinking of Arthur Dayne and the Sword Dawn, and that, you know, his father would. And again, the show shows us that Arthur Dayne is killed by Hal and Reed. Hal and Reed, you know, kills him, and so everybody thought Ned Stark beat him. But in the books, it could still be different. You know, a lot of people have theorized for a long time that maybe Hallen says something, right? Like,
yeah,
and he just he stops the fighting,
right? Is able to provide maybe. Well, so remember, Hallen Reed, by the way, went to the Isle of Faces, goes to the Tourney of Harrenhal, is around all this and is close with Eddard Stark. So yeah, maybe he does have some information or knows right when to intervene. I mean, that's the other thing too. Is like, is it similar to Jojen and knowing his own. Like maybe he got like a glimpse of something and knew when he could surprise Sir Arthur Dayne with an attack, or did he have the right words to kind of dissuade him from killing Eddard Stark? Maybe there's just a lot. There's so much, and it's great. There's just so much mystery still kind of surrounding it. I don't really care what the show. It's definitely something you have to consider is that he just snuck up on him, and it's mentioned in this chapter that the Krennic men use those tactics. Like they are kind of like the Children of the Forest in that they hide in the shadows. They use poison darts. They use different things, similar, maybe, you know, almost tactics like the Sand Snakes. And that's their way. That's what they do. So maybe that's something Sir Arthur Dayne could not have defended himself against, and he's killed. So, and the whole thing, like the sadness can come from the loss of his sister or John or whatever it may be. So, because, you know, Halland goes back with him and stuff. So it's not like he's sad there. Why is he sad? What is it about that memory that has caused so much sorrow? It's his sister. It's the loss there. So,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's something to keep in mind about, you know, and maybe as we go forward now that we have the reads, just kind of keeping track of how many times we hear about maybe the word Dawn, right? I mean, that's something that people keep track a lot of when you think of Corin Halfhand and him with John is the word Dawn is brought up several times, which is where a lot of people get that idea that maybe he is Arthur Dayne, or maybe, you know, Jon Snow is a Dayne and or something. So it's gonna be, we'll keep a track like that. You know, we've been kind of doing, we're with Danny, we were kind of keeping track of every time they said the word bells, you know, just thinking, you know, oh, maybe there's something there. We don't know, you know, like, so
yeah.
Maybe something to keep track of as we go forward here.
Right. Yeah. I think so too. Yeah. So just to kind of finish this chapter up, I mean, Bran now goes to sleep and he's hearing all those sounds and stuff. And he hears the howling of a pack of wolves and he wants to run. He wants to hunt. He wanted to. And then, boom, we kind of cut to this next section where he is now, he's in summer. I mean, he is now, he's warped. I mean, he's there. And there's this rattle of iron that made his ears prick up. His brother heard it too. And they raced through the undergrowth towards the sound, bounding across the still water at the foot of the old white one. He caught the scent of a stranger, the man smell well mixed with leather and earth and iron. And it's just like those. So leather, cool. Earth, okay. Now from Earth Wisdom, you know, think about that, Lord Adam Parker and others. and you think about iron, and you think about just throwing those words in there as things that you smell surrounding Jojen is interesting. The intruders had pushed a few yards into the wood when he came upon them, a female and a young male, with no taint of fear to them, even when he showed them the white of his teeth. His brother growled in a low throat, yet still did not run. "Here they come," said the female, Mira. Some part of him whispered, some wisp of a sleeping boy lost in a wolf dream. So he knows that that's Mira. That's the it's italicized. So realizing that's Mira. Okay. "Did you know they would be so big? They will be bigger still before they are grown." So right there, Jojen knows that he's seen them. He knows that they live and that they get bigger. Right. So he's definitely has some foresight. The young male said, watching them with his eyes, large, green, and unafraid. "The black one is full of fear and rage, but the gray one is strong, stronger than he knows. Can you feel him, sister?" Like, what does that mean? Can you feel him? Like, do they have some, what's the sense that they, you know, yeah.
Right.
Let's see. "So no," she said, moving a hand to the hilt of the long brown knife she wore. "Go careful, Jojen. He won't hurt me. This is not the day I die." The male walked toward them, unafraid, and reached out for his muzzle. A touch as light as a summer breeze, yet as the brush of those fingers, yet at the brush of those fingers, the wood dissolved, and the very ground turned to smoke beneath his feet and swirled away, laughing, and then he was spinning and falling. So here's something interesting. Like, the wolf dreams are often different. Like, when he's in the wolf dreams, he seems to be called to, like the contention that is there is that for him to, there's times where Bran knows himself, where he's not, like, all of that dialogue was coming through, like, it's as if Bran was the sleeping boy and he was sort of in the back of the mind of the direwolf, versus times where Bran is actually just having a dream about falling and a three-eyed crow, and he is Bran, and he's a crippled boy. And so those are different. And in this, at the touch of Jojen, you have a straight connection back to his dream of falling in the three-eyed crow. That's exactly what you have. The warg situation, the wolf dream disappears. It starts to go away. What does that mean? We'll explore that more, and we'll look at Jojen, you know, later on as we get into other chapters where around him it's just, like, he talks about warging. He talks about him being, he actually discourages him sometimes from spending too much time in his wolves and that he may become them and things like that, you know? So, it's just kind of fascinating, you know?
So. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm just doing some quick looking here just about, you know, Dawn and Lightbringer and all of this stuff. And it's just, you know, it showing up here. It's something we may have to do a YouTube video on. I know we've done one in the past, but it's just that word, right? The word Dawn. And you think about, well, you know, if you go back and you look at, like, the legends of Azor Ahai, and then there's Azor Ahai, there's the great hero, right? And there's all of these different kind of things for it. Well, you know, you could do the same thing with Lightbringer and Dawn. I mean, you know, It ends the long night, and so it's just interesting here, right? That they're swearing. We swear it by ice and fire. I was trying to do a search of ice and fire to see if that does come up at any point beforehand, and I'm not finding anything. So,
yeah, that's funny because I'm in a search of ice and fire too, looking at something too because. That's what these chapters do, right?
It's what we do. Yeah. Sometimes as an IR, while we're podcasting, we're like searching up bigger, deeper theories. And then afterwards, often what ends up being our extended edition is like, hold on, dude, I found something while we were recording. We got to kind of do this and talk about it. But yeah, so in a Game of Thrones, ice and fire do not. They don't really come up that often. It comes up in A Game of Thrones Tyrion 2, in talking about, it must be talking about Dragonbone. He said he found a comfortable spot just beyond the noise of the camp besides a swift running stream with waters as clear and cold as ice. So that's, remember when, I think that's when he and Jon are traveling to the wall. And then he's kind of thinking about dragons. And so it says, you know, that they're impervious to fire. But that's it. And then with John, once the words ice and actually, the words ice and fire don't. And then with Danny is the only other time they come up. They laid the Danny 10, which I think is her final chapter. The third level of the platform was woven of branches no thicker than a finger and covered by dry leaves and twigs. They laid them north to south from ice to fire. And that's it. So that's it in a Game of Thrones. So this is like the first time we really see it.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, so it's huge. It's hugely significant. Let me.
And then we swear it by ice and fire. Is the only time that it's said like, boom. And then so later in A Clash of Kings, Dany 4, when she's getting a prophecy, right? Says the shape of shadows, Morrow's not yet made. Drink from the cup of ice. Drink from the cup of fire. So. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
kind of interesting. Just really interesting to think about that. We swear it by ice and fire. Then we get story about the others. Then he's thinking about Arthur Dayne. And yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot.
To break down
from that chapter. Yeah,
yeah, there is. And I guess I'll do one more thing here. So we've kind of said, you know, as we keep doing this book club, we can't help ourselves sometimes just to dive into later stuff. So I'm going to here for a second. So. Later on, I bring up that whole thing about Jojen and the connection to the Three-Eyed Crow. And, like, I mean, even the direwolves there saying the white one, the ancient white one, you know, like that being the weirwood and stuff. And you have these things that are kind of, well, that's a thing, the Three-Eyed Crow. Then you have warging, you know, like all these different things that are going on. Later on, and I don't know, if no one's finished the series, this is, It's a dance with dragons. Spoiler, I guess. I don't know, like whatever. This is a reread, so I'm going for it. So here we go. So he is when he's with Mira. He's with his sister. They're in the cave. She is trying to convince them that like our job is done. We have brought Bran to the Three-Eyed Crow. So she thinks. So she thought. So Jojen thought. All we know, really. I mean, I like. There's that connection. I mean, she says this, so he's being stupid. She's talking about trying to get him to eat more, trying to get him to leave. He won't even, he's not going to, like, this is the day is soon approaching where he has foreseen that he will die, and there's no getting around it. His dreams are true, plain and simple, that's that. And she said, he's being stupid. Mira said, I had hoped that when we found your Three-Eyed Crow, .. Now I wonder why we ever came. And it's just wild to me that you get to that point later on where, like, Mira, and that's why I bring this up, that we are so led to believe that we should trust Mira and Jojen, and really, even through the character Mira, trusting her younger brother who has green sight, and who her, like, their father said that when he explains, and you'll find this out later, and we'll cover it in the upcoming, well, in this book, these upcoming chapters, but, like, when he has those visions about things that are happening at Winterfell, it's like they're told to Halland, and then Halland's like the interpreter and like sending him on. It's just like if Melisandre can have so many misinterpretations in her fires and dreams, I just don't think that you can have that. I mean, okay, Sir Matt, go back to one of your favorite books, The Hedge Knight, and look at how misinterpreted that dragon dream was of Sir Dunk. And everyone thought that he was like, which Targaryen is he going to kill? And it had nothing really to do with him. So I think green sight can get us in trouble.
Exactly. I would say more often than not, it's misinterpreted. It's very loose. I think it's how often do we actually see a green dream that's 100% accurate, right?
Yeah. And then so what they saw, this is what we get the details on, like this is actually what I saw scene by scene, but... What we hear the word dragon, and does dragon mean an actual dragon or a Targaryen? You know, like are these things symbolic? Do they stand for something else? That's sort of the question. So when you go look at these things, that's why I love people who do look at all the symbolism surrounding these characters and try to figure out what those mean, because especially when you look at visions and prophecies. I think George is trying to say something there too, is that like, yeah, you may see something, but what does it mean? Are you given the full interpretation of it? Can you truly see into the future and see everything clearly, or can you only see a sliver? And then even that, can that be, can that mislead you in some way? I like at the end, I mean, you know, I don't know, man, it's just tough. When I look at Jojen, I just think this is someone who, like, he just so believes in what he's seeing that it's, I don't know, man. And as much as he loves his sister and as much as he cares about, like, Bran and what he's doing, and then to get here and for them to kind of multiple times make a dis, like, it seems like they're not there with the actual three-eyed crow. Like, they're not there, and they didn't get, I mean, just the whole thing. Bran 3, A Dance with Dragons, go read it. It will fascinate you, and you will learn a lot. So
yeah. All right. Well, as I believe we have one Raven to check out. I think we got this one. This one is from our somebody sent this to us on Instagram. Let me.
Yeah. So this came from. Let me see here. Oh, Lady Jessica. So this this came from Lady Jessica. Yeah. So I'll go ahead and read it if you want.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so I don't think we've covered this. I was asking. It's been a while back, and if we did, we apologize. I saw this and I thought, oh, it was interesting. So she says this. Curious to know y'all's thoughts on the names throughout the series. Catelyn Stark is used interchangeably with Catelyn Tully, where Cersei Lannister is never referenced as Cersei Baratheon. Sansa remains Sansa Stark throughout the series, even after. Her marriage to Tyrion Lannister and Ramsay Bolton, versus Snow, right? There's that. Lysa Arryn is rarely called Lysa Tully, etc. When a lady is married, they place the cloak, bringing her under the husband's house and that house's protection. Wouldn't that be the name as well? Just curious if y'all think there's a reason behind when the family names are used instead of married names. I personally can't see Gurm doing this unintentionally. And I actually have not really researched this because we were right before the show just kind of looking at that, and we found that, and I thought, wow, that's interesting. Because I have myself, Sir Matt, wondered why that is. Because a lot of times we were making a playlist for House Lannister, and we were making a house list for, like, House Baratheon. And it's like, well, wait a second. In House Baratheon, here, like in House Lannister, we're putting, you know, Tommen, Marcella, and Joffrey. Why? Because we know that they're bastards, right? So I think there's that. Even though it's Tommen Baratheon, that's his name. So that's interesting. But you look at Cersei, and yeah, I think is it just her personality? Is it just a choice that she makes? They do use Catelyn Tully and Catelyn Stark interchangeably, actually, and that is interesting. I think that's sort of to show her allegiance to House Tully and to House Stark and how close she is. I think when you only call Cersei Lannister by her birth, you know, name, and not her, you know, married as Cersei Baratheon, I think that's to again show that she has no intention of you know, being sensitive to Baratheons, right? Or being whatever. She's a Lannister through and through. Because you can kind of see that does happen. I mean, you look at Lady Hornwood, actually, and you look at some of these other individuals who... Lady Hornwood was once a Manderly, right, or something? And so it's actually not even... She married into the Hornwoods. So, and it's trying to figure out, what do I do here? So that is something I haven't explored much, and I don't know if you've given it any thought, but it does come up from time to time.
Yes, I do have a thought on it here, but really quickly, I'm actually in our good buddy, A Search of Ice and Fire. I don't think that she... Let me see here. So it's kind of interesting. So you must be a fierce and hard as the North, Catelyn Tully. So Cat, I guess, is kind of interesting because, and I guess Cersei as well, because... So in Eddard 2, it says, you know, he was set to wed Catelyn Tully. And then, you know, she talks about, you know, I was still Catelyn Tully. But then they do call her Catelyn Stark. So it's kind of in her association. in her association. So in Eddard 4, in her association, they would say like, oh, Catelyn Tully, because if she's at Riverrun, right? Maybe. So in Eddard 4, Littlefinger says, this is when he brings her to the brothel, can you think of a less likely place to find a Catelyn Tully? He smiled. So I think there he's doing it because he doesn't want to call her Catelyn Stark because he's, you know, still got feelings for her. So the next time that she's called Catelyn Tully is Catelyn 5. She says, I was still Catelyn Tully then. She's talking about, you know, something in the past. But the next time she's actually called Catelyn Tully is after Ned is dead. I think it's more that the fans use them interchangeably, right? Catelyn Stark, Catelyn Tully. The reason I don't think we do it with Cersei Lannister, why we don't call her Cersei Baratheon, is because she's immediately identified as a Lannister, and they're always just called the Lannisters. With Joffrey, sometimes we do, I think he's a little more interchanged as Joffrey Baratheon, because every time he's presented at court, it's Joffrey Baratheon. But with them, I mean, he uses his own sigil that is both the Lannister and Baratheon sigil. So I think it's a little bit easier there because we know that they're bastards anyway. And then Robert's kind of gone. So Robert's gone and then Renly's gone. So really the only Baratheon we really think of is then Stannis, right? So we don't really associate them with, we've never really associated them with the Baratheons because we know and they act like them and they look like them and they're mostly associated with Cersei and Jaime and Tyrion. So they're so associated with them that I think even though we call them Lannister, even though technically it is Lannister, but technically it should be a bastard name because it's not, well, that's why, what's his name? Blackfyre, Daemon Blackfyre, is actually he's a bastard of two Targaryens. So he technically, I think it should not be Blackfyre. He's a bastard. So technically they should be like Joffrey. Then you get into the whole thing. Well, is it Joffrey Waters? Is it Joffrey whatever it is out in the Westerlands? I always forget because those are like the least you see bastard name. So I think it's just kind of mostly association, but she isn't really actually called Catelyn Tully in the search until after Ned's dead. Then she's called Catelyn Tully a few times more. And I guess it just kind of depends, but it's not really that often. Not really that often. They just the name Catelyn. I can't actually see that Catelyn and like Catelyn Tully in the search, and just using Search of Ice and Fire here as being presented as her name. Actually, it doesn't happen.
As Catelyn Tully. Yeah.
Yeah. So the only time. So the only time she's actually said as Catelyn Tully is once
from a different character.
From a different character once after. No, she does it herself. Catelyn 9, you must be fierce and hard as the North, Catelyn Tully. You must be a Stark for true now. So this is when Rob is, I think, becoming king in the North. So the only person who actually ever calls her Catelyn Tully outside of like that was her name is Littlefinger.
Yeah, and here I was going to – so as you were talking through all of that, I was thinking to myself like – a lot of this might have to do with just like point of view. You know, who do you think you're like, you know, Sansa Stark. Right. You know, she's Stark. She's never, I mean, like, whatever. See, this is all, she's being married, you know, against her will. I mean, all this kind of stuff. Right. So she is just, and then her name changes to Elaine and so on. But, I was thinking about this. Yeah. It's probably just like, it's that person. That's how Littlefinger thinks. He doesn't want to think of her as a Stark. You know, he wants to think of her as a Tully. That's who he loves. And he was always kind of pursuing. So that makes sense, I guess, to kind of think about that, and maybe we got to look at point of view and I don't know, it's kind of fascinating. I haven't looked at it closely enough, but you're right. If you go to a Search of Ice and Fire and you kind of try to examine some of these things, is it a character who is calling that person?
Cersei calls her, Cersei at one point references her as Catelyn Tully. I'm doing a digger search here, and then yeah, but she shows up a little bit more as Catelyn Stark. So no, it is interesting. And again, yeah, we don't necessarily do it with a lot of the Stark children, even though Sansa has been married several times. So yeah, I think a lot of it's just the fans, and I think she's the toughest because she's, you know, Catelyn Tully, she's Catelyn Stark, but then Ned dies and then she's with the Tullys. And so I think it's just kind of easier. We call Eliza Aaron. I mean, yeah, Eliza, we don't call her Eliza Tully. So,
right.
Yeah. I think it's just for her. It's pretty interchangeably, but you know what? I just call her Lady Stoneheart. And
hey, come on now.
Yeah,
come on.
There we go. I mean, so.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. I do think it's like I'm looking at one here where Lady Catelyn is calling herself Catelyn Tully Stark, and she's talking to herself, actually.
Right.
Encouraging herself to kind of, so that's the right. First time I've seen.
We call her Marjorie Tyrell the entire way through, even though she's Marjorie Baratheon and then technically Marjorie mm-hmm. Baratheon again, mm-hmm. when she marries Joffrey, although theoretically it should be Marjorie Lannister, although even more theoretically it should be Marjorie, you know, Rivers or whatever. So I mean that's yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. So yeah, I think that's a good question. I guess I would encourage listeners, you know, if you have thoughts on that, or if somebody's looked up a really cool theory, or has some, you know, threads going across your room trying to you know, explain why some of that is happening, it'd be cool to kind of look at. I'm guessing it just has something to do with that character's perception of themselves or what they're thinking about at the time, or maybe proximity to a certain region or something. I haven't really dug into it too much, but it's a good question, and it's a good Raven, and it's a good thought. So thanks again to Lady Jessica. That was cool. That was good.
Yeah, let me see here real quick here. I just want to see the bastard name for the Western Lands is. Oh wait, there's somebody. Waters is King's Landing, in Dragonstone. Snow is the North. Pike for the Iron Islands. Rivers for the Riverlands. Stones for the Vale. Hill for the Western Lands. Flowers for the Reach. Storm of the Stormlands, and Sand for Dorne. And then Blackfyre kind of later kind of adopts its own thing. But that does get kind of interesting because sometimes do people get the name? You know, it's kind of confusing. Is it from where they're born or who their parents are? It seems like sometimes that's, I think, been interchanged a few times as well. So I think a lot of this is like headcanon with fans and that we've kind of created some of this stuff. And so, but yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I'm thinking about all of Robert's bastards now, and like some of them, you know, go by the name Stone, Waters, and what have you. So
exactly. Storm, yeah. So technically, it should be Hill. I mean, if you want to get ultra specific about it, it should be Hill or Waters, because I guess he was probably born. He would have been born at King's Landing. Mm-hmm. All the children were, because they were married at the time. So
yeah. Yeah. So, wow. Okay. All right, cool. So that was fun. Folks, if you have, we're trying to make those connections, you know, to later in the books and trying to have some more fun with rabbit holes and stuff. So, you know, if you got one you've been sitting on or something you want to send our way, make sure you do that. Instagram, we're checking that. Twitter, you can send it through the website. Some folks, again, have been sending stuff through the website. So thanks again. Check that out. It's, great website, well designed there by Sir James. So appreciate that. But yeah, I think that's it, man. I think we're good. We're gonna have extended edition coming up next. We'll have that over on Patreon, so you guys can maybe we'll dive into this a little bit more. We'll do a little research, and then we can kind of continue this conversation over there.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Catelyn II of A Clash of Kings.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.